The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues. For the next half hour, I'm going to be reading articles from the Harvard Health Letter. And first of all, we're going to finish up some news briefs from the November 2021 issue. Nationwide, sugar reductions are projected to save health and lives. How big a health problem is sugar in processed food and drinks? It's so big that reducing sugar levels in those products might prevent millions of health problems and even deaths, according to a team of scientists from Harvard, Tufts, and New York City's Department of Health and Mental Hygiene. Their work was published August 27, 2021, in Circulation. The researchers came up with a model of how a sugar reduction policy proposed by the U.S. National Salt and Sugar Reduction Initiative would affect our health and economy. The proposed policy would cut 20% of sugar from packaged foods and 40% from sweetened beverages. The scientists determined that during an average adult's population lifetime, such reductions could prevent 2.5 million heart attacks, strokes, and cardiac arrests, as well as preventing 750,000 diabetes cases and 490,000 cardiovascular deaths, and save billions in health care costs. If the proposed policy is implemented, companies would voluntarily commit to sugar reduction in food and drinks. But you don't have to wait until they do. Take charge of your health by reading nutrition labels and limiting added sugars to no more than 10% of your total daily calories. In other words, 50 grams of sugar in a 2,000-calorie diet, as recommended by the 2020 to 2025 Dietary Guidelines for Americans. Now in the Harvard Health Letter, we're going to turn to Ask the Doctor by Dr. Anthony L. Komaroff, MD, who's the editor-in-chief of the Harvard Health Letter. Question. My doctor says that measurements like the body mass index or other measurements are better predictors of my future health than my weight. What are these other measurements? Dr. Komaroff responds. Why does a doctor measure your weight? To find out how much fat you have, particularly unhealthy types of fat. There are several fancy and expensive ways of measuring the amount of body fat, but they are useful primarily in research studies. Your total body weight reflects not only the amount of fat in your body, of course, but also the amount of many other tissues like muscle, liver, heart, brain, and so on. And the total weight of all your body tissues is likely to be greater if you're taller. So scientists developed the Body Mass Index, or BMI, a measurement determined by a combination of your weight and height. Many studies have shown that a BMI of 18.5 to 24.9 is a healthy weight. 25 to 29.9 is overweight, and 30 or greater is obese. Being overweight or obese is associated with worse health and earlier death. The BMI combines your weight and height because whether you're overweight depends on your height. For example, if you weigh 200 pounds and stand 6 feet 4 inches, you're not overweight. But if you weigh 200 pounds and stand 5 feet tall, you're very overweight. In fact, you're obese. While BMI is a lot better measure of your health then just wait. It still has its flaws. It doesn't assess body fat as well in older folks as it does in younger adults. And it doesn't distinguish between fat that's in your belly from fats that's in other places, like in your hips. Excess abdominal fat is worse for your health than fat elsewhere. For this reason, measurement of waist circumference has been studied as a marker for health. It's measured at your natural waist in between the lowest rib and the top of the hip bone, or at the belly button. It's a very accurate way of estimating the amount of abdominal fat. Increased waist circumference strongly predicts worse health and earlier death. But it's hard to standardize just exactly where to measure the waist. Two different health professionals might get different measurements of your waist circumference. The relationship between waist and hip measurement is also used. With a higher waist-to-hip ratio, there is a greater risk of adverse health outcomes and earlier death. Unfortunately, the hip measurement, like the waist measurement, is also hard to standardize. Because weight and height are simple to measure, most doctors still estimate the amount of your body fat by measuring these, and therefore your BMI, rather than using one of the other measurements. It's really important to maintain a healthy BMI. Now in the Harvard Health Letter of November 2021, the next article is called Four Reasons for Tingling or Numbness in the Arms and Legs. Temporary pins and needle sensation or numbness are common when you've held the same position too long. This can put pressure on a nerve or compromise blood flow to the nerve. But the same conditions can cause these same symptoms to be persistent, even constant. Here are four of the most common reasons for long-lasting symptoms of tingling or numbness in the arms and legs. The first is peripheral neuropathy. This condition involves damage to the nerve fibers that run through the body. Most often, the symptoms start gradually, first in the limbs, particularly the toes. The symptoms include a reduced ability to sense something touching the skin, tingling, burning, or itching, as well as weakness, twitching, or shrinkage of the muscles. Most neuropathies affect both sides of the body similarly, points out Dr. Anne Louise Oaklander, a neurologist who specializes in neuropathy at Harvard-affiliated Massachusetts General Hospital. People typically notice the symptoms more when they are resting. Many also develop other symptoms like dizziness or rapid heart rate on standing and gastrointestinal symptoms. Identifying an individual's cause of neuropathy is the key to finding effective treatment. Type 2 diabetes is the most common cause worldwide, but autoimmune conditions, medications like chemotherapy or megavitamins, or exposure to heavy metals or pesticides can trigger many cases. The next is sciatica. The sciatic nerves originate from the spinal nerve roots in the pelvis and run into each leg. Pain, numbness, tingling, or weakness caused by compression of these nerve roots is called sciatica. It usually affects middle-aged or older people who have arthritis of the spine and a bulging or ruptured disc. Sciatica often comes on suddenly, along with low back pain and spasms. It may linger for a few weeks or months while the body heals the disc. If sciatica causes weakness in your leg, tell your doctor immediately because you may need surgery to prevent permanent leg weakness. Next is spinal stenosis. Spinal stenosis is narrowing of the central spinal canal, the channel inside the vertebrae that contains the spinal cord and nerve roots. This canal can be narrowed by arthritis, bulging or herniated discs, or thickened ligaments. The narrowed canal often irritates the nerves and causes limb tingling or numbness, as well as low back pain. It's worse when you stand up straight or walk. Next is peripheral artery disease. Peripheral artery disease, or PAD, is atherosclerosis that causes narrowing of the arteries of the legs, or rarely the arms. This can cause painful cramps, typically in the calf during activity, since the muscles don't get enough blood and oxygen that disappear with rest. It's similar to pain in the chest with exercise caused by narrowing of the arteries that supply blood to the heart, and it requires urgent medical evaluation, Dr. Oaklander explains. She notes that PAD can also cause tingling in the legs or arms if nerves don't get enough oxygen to function well. For some people, leg numbness or tingling from neuropathy may be mild and might not interfere with daily activities. Others develop chronic pain or itchiness that make it hard to sleep, work, exercise, or even socialize. In some cases, leg numbness can sound alarm bells for a life-threatening condition. In any event, note carefully when, where, and under what conditions numbness or tingling occurs, and report it to your doctor right away. Anything that affects the nervous system is serious, Dr. Oaklander says. Even mild symptoms can be a warning sign of future irreversible damage if they're not corrected first. And the article goes on to talk briefly about limb symptoms and stroke. Rarely, unfamiliar strange sensations or weakness of the legs and arms that comes on suddenly can be a sign of transient ischemic attack, TIA, or stroke, an emergency involving insufficient blood flow to part of the brain, or in rare cases, the spinal cord. Typically, TIA and stroke symptoms affect only one side of the body. The symptoms include new sudden weakness on one side of the body, trouble walking, seeing, speaking, or understanding others, severe dizziness or imbalance, or severe headache. Unless a blood clot or other treatable cause is diagnosed and corrected in a few hours, the affected nerve cells die, leaving disabilities that are often permanent. Such symptoms require an immediate call to 911 or an emergency department visit. Now I'm going to go over an article called Taming the Chronic Inflammation of Psoriasis. Lotions, medications, light, and laser treatment can help. Chronic inflammation in the body does not always make itself apparent. It may produce no symptoms, but still be quietly causing damage. Such quiet inflammation may be encouraging the buildup of plaques of atherosclerosis in your arteries, or driving your thyroid gland to become underactive or overactive. Psoriasis is different, however. In this chronic inflammatory disease, immune cells attack the skin, causing visible, uncomfortable lesions. It is an autoimmune condition. The immune system, your defense against foreign microbes and chemicals, mistakenly starts attacking your own tissues. There are numerous kinds of psoriasis. Plaque psoriasis is by far the most common and accounts for 90% of cases. It causes thick, red, raised patches of skin covered in silvery or white scales. These plaques can develop anywhere, but they most often occur on the elbows, the knees, the scalp, or the lower back. Plaques may ooze or itch, but scratching or picking at them makes them worse, so try to leave them alone. There are some other kinds of psoriasis. One is guttate psoriasis. It's the second most common type, and appears as small, red, scaly bumps on the arms, back, chest, or abdomen. Then there's inverse psoriasis. This shows up in the body creases between the buttocks, under the arms, or near the genitals. The lesions can look smooth and red. There's also nail psoriasis, which causes yellow, pitted, or crumbling fingernails. Pustular psoriasis is a type that creates painful, pus-filled blisters on the hands and feet and can be life-threatening. As with most autoimmune conditions, we don't know exactly what triggers psoriasis. There's no single factor that can predict if someone will develop psoriasis. It's a complex interplay between an individual's genetic predisposition, the immune system, and environmental triggers, says Dr. Megan No, a dermatologist with Harvard-affiliated Brigham and Women's Hospital. Scientists have, however, unraveled the cascade of events that creates psoriasis symptoms. In plaque psoriasis, certain white blood cells, the T helper cells, enter the topmost layer of skin, the epidermis, and produce inflammatory chemicals that speed up cell growth so much that dead and dying skin cells accumulate on the surface of the skin, forming plaques. If you have psoriasis, you may be at risk for developing another health problem. For example, 1 in 3 people with psoriasis will develop psoriatic arthritis. This condition causes pain and stiffness or swelling in the joints of the fingers, the toes, or the spine, or at the junctions of the bones and tendons or ligaments. Other conditions may develop as well. People with severe plaque psoriasis, having plaques on more than 10% of the body, have been known to have higher rates of hypertension, diabetes, chronic kidney disease, and certain types of liver disease, as well as coronary artery disease. What's the link? Well, the hypothesis is that the inflammation seen in the skin might be affecting other internal organs as well, Dr. No says. Additionally, research is underway to better understand these other conditions and how they are affected by psoriasis treatment. Dr. No says that topical steroids, gentle exfoliate lotions, and emollients that keep the skin hydrated are very effective for mild psoriasis. Some are available over the counter, and some require a prescription. Other psoriasis treatments include ultraviolet light, and this is called phototherapy, laser therapy, or vitamin A. Stronger therapies are often needed for moderate to severe psoriasis. Your doctor might prescribe immunomodulating drugs to suppress the immune system, or biologics which target proteins involved in inflammation. These more powerful treatments have become available in recent years. Thanks to medical research, and it can make a huge difference in people's lives. Dr. No goes on to point out that the pandemic has had a big effect on people with psoriasis because it's made it difficult for many patients to see their doctor to continue psoriasis treatments or talk about starting new medications. Other patients have had to stop phototherapy because during the pandemic, their doctor's office has been closed. Similarly, they may have to stop taking injections because the place where they get injections is closed. The next article from the Harvard Health Letter is entitled, "Is Your Medication Making You Lightheaded?" Many drugs can cause this symptom. Consider strategies to manage the risks. You're taking a new medication and you're feeling a little lightheaded. Are the two connected? It's an important question since many drugs are known to cause lightheadedness. And lightheadedness comes with a dangerous risk, falling. Just being older increases your risk for falls. If you add three or four medications, or even just one with a known side effect of lightheadedness, it increases your risk even more, says Joan Doyle Petrangelo, a pharmacist at Harvard-affiliated Massachusetts General Hospital. Lightheadedness can mean many things. You may think of it as a feeling faint or about to pass out, off balance, nauseated, confused, or weak. All of these symptoms fall under the umbrella of lightheadedness. But lightheadedness is not a sensation of the world moving or spinning around. Such a sensation is vertigo, which occurs when the body's sensory inputs, like vision or the sense of touch, send confusing messages to the brain. Vertigo is often associated with inner ear disorders. Why do some drugs cause lightheadedness? Well, there are many reasons. Sometimes they simply work too well. In the case of diabetes drugs, your blood sugar may fall too low, which can cause lightheadedness. And with some blood pressure medications, you may urinate a lot of fluid and become dehydrated, which lowers your blood pressure too much. Or your blood pressure drugs might drop your pressure when you stand up suddenly, causing you to feel temporarily lightheaded. Or the medications may keep your blood pressure below normal all the time, not just when you stand up, which also can make you lightheaded, Doyle Petrangelo says. What can you do? Learn about the potential side effects of all your medications and be on high alert if lightheadedness is a possibility. Jot down the day and time you take a pill and the side effects you experience. Your record of these details can help your doctor determine if you need a change in your medication. With blood pressure medications, antidepressants, antipsychotics, and anti-seizure medicines, lightheadedness should subside in a week or two, Doyle Petrangelo says. If it doesn't, report it to your doctor. You may need a lower dose or a different medication. If a drug has a high likelihood of causing lightheadedness, Doyle Petrangelo says you may want to take it at night so you don't experience the symptom during the day. And if you know a medication makes you lightheaded, don't get up abruptly from a chair or bed. Give yourself a chance to get your bearings. You should always stay hydrated throughout the day and check your blood pressure regularly with a home monitor. If your blood pressure is normal, but on the low side of normal, or if it's unusually low for you, let your doctor know about it, Doyle Petrangelo says. You may need a medication adjustment. The article goes on to list a whole bunch of lightheadedness culprits. Many medications commonly cause lightheadedness. Common offenders include antidepressants like fluoxetine or Prozac, sertraline or Zoloft, paroxetine or Paxil, and amitriptyline or Elavil. Antipsychotics like quetiapine, which is Seroquel, and olanzapine, or Zyprexa. Anti-seizure drugs like gabapentin or Neurontin, which is often given to treat neuropathy or pain associated with shingles. Blood pressure drugs, including diuretics like hydrochlorothiazide. ACE inhibitors like lisinopril, which is also called Zestril. Calcium channel blockers like diltiazem, which is called Cardizem. And beta blockers like metoprolol, which is also called Lopressor. Diabetes drugs can cause lightheadedness. These include glipizide or glucotrol and gliburide or diabeta, Of course, these medications are causing lightheadedness because they lower the blood sugar. Pain medications can cause lightheadedness, like oxycodone, which is also called OxyContin. Sedatives like lorazepam or Ativan and diazepam or Valium can cause lightheadedness. Sleep medications like Zolpidem or Ambien can sometimes cause lightheadedness. And urologic medications that work by relaxing the bladder muscles, like Tamsulosin or Flomax, which is prescribed to help urine flow more easily, and oxybutynin or Ditropan, which is used to treat overactive bladder. Finally, there's an article that tells us to step to stay safe when you push or pull an object. And one of the main points this article makes is that you should have strong core and leg muscles, because your core and leg muscles give you power and stability when pushing or pulling. These muscles include the transverse abdominis, the quadriceps in front of the thighs, hamstrings in the back of the thighs, gluteals in the buttocks, and the gastrocnemius and soleus muscles in the calves. If these muscles are weak, you risk back injury when you push or pull. You might overcompensate and arch your back when pulling, or bend forward if pushing. That's going to put stress on your lower back, which can cause spasms, pinched nerves, or bulging or herniated discs, says Stephanie O'Brien, a physical therapist with Harvard-affiliated Spalding Rehabilitation Network. Well, it looks like that's about all the time we have. We've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. I sure hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. I sure hope you liked it. Thank you.